Chapter 18.
Leia hears voices through the door. She leans in and listens, and as she listens, she finds herself growing furious. Akbar.
Alliances across the galaxy are patchwork. Too many systems stand alone and are falling between the widening fissure between our power and the Empire's own influence. We are not growing swiftly enough to match their decline. We are not bridging that gap.
Mon Mothma.
This is why we must concentrate our efforts, helping those worlds that offer a likelier chance of joining the New Republic, in order to have a voice in the Senate.
One of Mon's advisors, Hostis Idge.
Our resource reserves are stretched thin, Chancellor. But there remains one simple way of obtaining new lines of food, fuel, and other vital supplies.
Mon's other chief advisor, Oxy Cray Corbin.
Oh, please, let me guess. A stronger military? Tell us, how will a more robust military help?
Hostis.
If we step up recruitment, we will have more soldiers to secure supply lines once possessed by the Empire. Such resources are out there in the wind, and who knows who will possess them?
More bluster and clamor. It's time to step in. Leia palms the door panel, and the door hisses open. The metal shutters of the meeting room window are closed, though light from the bright Chandrillan day outside bleeds in at the edges like magma. All around them float various holoprojections, datagraphs, system maps, planet maps, schematics. It adds up to a galaxy in chaos. A galaxy whose allegiance is divided. Not divided merely between the two warring sides of the New Republic and the Galactic Empire, but diced up finely into factions. Those factions will fight. They will fall to one another. They will form their own power structures. Warlords will lead them, as will despots, crime bosses, cult leaders. The galaxy will go from suffering the cruelty of the Empire's order to being thrown into the maelstrom of disorder and madness. It will be an ugly time, Leia knows, if the New Republic cannot see its way clear through this labyrinthine tangle. A dark time. As she steps into the room, all eyes fall to her. They are surprised. Surprised even though she has a chair of her own in this room, a chair that presently sits empty between Mon Mothma and Admiral Akbar. The chair sits empty because no one told her of this meeting. She was kept away on purpose.
Leia,
Mon Mothma says, standing up.
Welcome. Sit. I'll stand.
She hears the frostiness in her own voice. Leia thinks to control it, then decides against it. Let them be frozen out the way they're trying to freeze me out.
Having a meeting? Please understand,
Mon says.
You're going through a hard time. With your husband gone, and that unfortunate situation with that crew...
Yes, how unfortunate.
You are, of course, welcome to sit. Join us. Offer your thoughts.
I told her,
Akbar says, his voice a gruff gurgle. Mon nods.
Of course. It was my mistake, Leia, for not inviting you. I simply thought you had a great deal on your mind already.
Leia is more than just the face of our efforts across the galaxy,
the Admiral says, giving a little nod as if to agree with himself.
She is also a precious resource unto herself. Smart and savvy, and a needed voice.
Akbar, Leia realizes, is a good friend. Mon is too. She has to remind herself of that. But Mon is a realist. Sometimes that seems cold. And Leia is an idealist. Her passions can run hot. They will remain friends through this, but that doesn't mean Leia can't and shouldn't push back. This is a delicate time for the New Republic. When Palpatine founded the Empire, he did so like a parasite, a creature growing inside the body of a stronger host until it could burst free from the skin and take control. The Empire emerged from this brutal chrysalis fully formed, and all it had to do was claim the resources that the winnowing Republic already possessed. Ships, weapons, soldiers, supplies. The New Republic has no such advantage. It must claw and scrape for every ship, every weapon, every scrap of food, and every willing soldier. Mon wants this transition to be as peaceable as possible. That is, of course, a noble goal. And in late nights, the Chancellor confided in Leia that she is wisely struck by the fear of what happened the first time the parasite of Palpatine squirmed under the skin. How easy it was for him to prey on the anxieties of the galaxy. How simple it was for him to turn system against system by stoking the fires of xenophobia, anger, selfishness. And here, Luke's voice echoes in her mind. The ways and tools of the dark side, Leia. How do you form an empire? By stealing a republic. And how do you steal a republic? By convincing its people that they cannot govern themselves, that freedom is their enemy, and that fear is their ally. Palpatine was an able puppet master. He gave himself the power. He pulled on all the strings, and the galaxy danced to his whims. Mon, thankfully, wants no such power, and so she's already begun ceding it. As Chancellor, she's put up votes that have begun the path of demilitarization. That presents a sign of moral strength, but also sends up a signal of defensive vulnerability. That means getting her to approve new military contracts, like the creation of the Starhawks, is like pulling the teeth from the mouth of an ornery tauntaun. As to defeating the scattered remains of the Empire, Mon seems of a mind to let that infection burn itself out. Strike when necessary, and otherwise sit back and let the antibodies of a free galaxy do the work. That, Leia believes, misunderstands the infection. It won't take much for the disease to again take hold. And sometimes diseases evolve. Worse, what does it say to those systems that need the New Republic right now? The Empire still enslaves whole worlds. Like Kashyyyk. She thinks. Kashyyyk, one planet where the New Republic is content to let the Empire burn itself out. That comes with an undercurrent of grim, overly pragmatic reality. The Wookiees are not a meaningful resource to the New Republic. Not militarily, not governmentally. Kashyyyk has resources, but none so dramatic that the New Republic is willing to sacrifice ships, and besides, the Empire has plundered most of those resources already. But sacrifice is everything, isn't it? It means the willingness to leap into the void to save those who need saving. To save your friends. We argue, Leia says suddenly, about whether it is the time to build up the military or to dampen its effect. And all the while we forget that we have the privilege of arguing from comfortable chairs many parsecs away. We argue about what's prudent or what's practical while people suffer. Do you know what people want to see from the New Republic? Do you truly? Mon cedes the floor. Please. They want us to be heroes. A moment passes where everyone chuckles uncomfortably. At least until they realize she's quite serious. Mon says,
I know. You're not wrong. And you are a hero. And you helped us all be the heroes needed to get to this point. But such passion and idealism have to be tempered by reality. This is a government. It has a lot of moving pieces.
Leia stiffens.
And that is where we'll fail. This isn't a machine, Chancellor. When did we start to see this as a government and not a collection of people helping people? We've started seeing territories and battle logistics, and votes. We've stopped seeing hearts and minds and faces. The more we do that, the more we lose. Of ourselves, of the galaxy.
Running a galactic government is complex.
Then I don't want to run a galactic government!
Her words come out louder than she means them to. All in the room seem startled by their intensity.
Empty yourself.
Center yourself.
She must, but she can't, Mon says softly.
This is about Kashyyyk. About Han. We should have helped the Wookiees.
Her voice trembles with rage and sorrow.
I understand.
Mon speaks like a mother to a tantruming child. Slow, steady, and with a condescending tone.
She's talking down to me. My own friend is talking to me like I'm a youngling.
But as we discussed, we ran the numbers, we performed the simulations, and now is not the sensible time.
Sensible? Leia barks. We've lost all sense, I fear. You're right. I shouldn't have come to this meeting.
Akbar calls after her, but she doesn't stop. Leia turns heel and marches back out of the meeting room. If only she could slam the door, but it wishes gently shut behind her. A transmission shimmers into being. There, projected above Rax's desk, is the visage of a Bith, a drink slinger from the distant planet of Iridiru. His appearance can only mean good news. The Bith's massive cranium turns left and right, as if to make sure he's alone. Satisfied, the bartender says,
They're here. And they're together.
A smile spreads across Rax's face like a consuming fire. It warms him, this news. It's taken too long to get here. So many puzzle pieces to nudge into place. And my, how those pieces were stubborn. Setting up a convincing mystery and threat is delicate work. One must commit to the theatrics, but never overdo them. If any detected his shadowy hands above all of it, directing the stage, they would buck like an ill-saddled beast. The contingency continues, he thinks. Good, Gallius Rax says. Continue monitoring. Credits will be forthcoming. Then he ends the transmission. He wonders if Golos Aram is a piece deserving of a nudge or two. Patience, he chides himself. Let the mechanism work. Part of that mechanism is Sloane. She is one who has detected his shadow behind it all. That is a problem. Maybe one he can use to his advantage yet. It is time to call her in. Time, too, for one last test. The room is white and mostly empty. The walls are padded. The windows are many, and the sunlight streaming in is bold and bright. The only things in this room are Leia and a potted plant. The plant is a sapling of the sanctuary trees of Endor, though some call it a serpent's puzzle, named so after the way the dark branches weave together in a kind of organic knotwork. She grew it from a seed, a small, knobby acorn given to her by the little Ewok known as Wicket. She grew the plant in a pot of Chandrillan soil, and to her shock and delight, it took. It has become a focus of her meditations, as suggested by Luke. She decided, after storming out of the meeting room, that it was best to come here. Best for her to focus on something that wasn't the state of the galaxy or the nascent New Republic, or that nagging feeling in the deep of her middle that Mon has betrayed her in some small but significant way. She sits with it in the middle of the room. She clears her mind, and then she tries to feel the tree. She does this at least once a day. Leia has never felt the tree. Not for lack of trying. She sits here. She empties herself of breath, and then she tries to free herself of thought, just like Luke taught her to. That part works fine most of the time. But he said it was possible to feel the life force of things with the Force. She swore to him that she just doesn't have it. It being that mystical, intangible power that her brother possesses, and This thought comes with a set of chills grappling up her spine that her father, her birth father, possessed too. Luke continues to swear that with time, she will come to feel the Force just as he does. He explained that it was how she felt his pain back during Cloud City. Him hanging there, wearied and beaten, and about to fall into the roiling clouds below. He said he'd teach her, and he did teach her. Some things, at least. Then, he left. Just like Han left.
Luke.
She finds her mind wandering to him now. Her thoughts reach for her wayward brother like a living thing. Like branches seeking the sun.
I need you here. I need your help.
Luke sometimes had a farm boy's naivete, yes. Right now, she feels she could use a little of that. Her mind is a tangle of thoughts. The complexities of politics, the love of and anger over Han, the loss of Luke, and above all else, the ever-persistent worry about the life she carries. Her skin tingles. Her mind feels suddenly unmoored from the rest of her. Leia feels dizzy enough to fall over.
Oh. Oh, my!
There.
There it is. Washing over her and through her. An awareness unlike any she's ever felt before. A pulsing glow, flickering and strong.
It's not the plant. It's not Luke. It's not even Han.
It's her child.
This isn't just a mother's recognition of the life inside. That she already knows. She's already well aware of the bump and tumble of that little person she carries. And she already knows about the heartburn, and the pre-breakfast nausea, and the post-breakfast nausea, and the post-post-breakfast hunger.
Oh, this goes beyond all that. This is something separate from her. It isn't a physical feeling. It is all around her. It suffuses her like the perfume from a jungle of flowers. As such, she is suddenly aware of her child's mind and spirit. She senses pluck and wit and steel blood and a keen mind. Oh,
and by the blood of Alderaan, is this one going to be a fighter?
Wait, he? It's a boy. It's a boy.
Her hands fly in front of her mouth as she both laughs and cries at the same time. This, she thinks, is the light side that Luke always goes on about.
The promise of light. The promise of a new life.
And then, the black edging of the dark side encircles her bliss like a noose. Because what rides swift on the heels of hope but fear? A fear that stretches out far and wide like a growing shadow. Fear of having a child in an unstable galaxy. Fear of whether or not Han is alive, or Luke too.
Will the child grow up with a father? An uncle? A mentor? What is her legacy? And what will her boy's legacy be?
Her breath catches in her chest. She has to force herself to breathe.
Clear your mind. Clear it all. Focus, Leia. Focus.
Are those her thoughts? Or are they Luke's? The Empire cares little for the fripperies of life, preferring instead to put a cold, gray veneer on just about everything. But Gallius Rax grew up in a dead place, and so putting in this garden here on the upper echelons of the Ravager gives him a source of solace. From behind him, Rey Sloane clears her throat. He does not turn. He suspects she has brought a blaster. Sloane does not trust him, but he suspects she feels trapped by her options. The one option that makes the most sense, the one that would demonstrate strength that few others would deny, would be to burn a hole in his back. Fleet Admiral Rax hopes now to change that. "You despise me," he says, staring at the stalk of a red-tongued Kubari flower. Its petals have many layers, each folded against the next. The prettiest, most crimson petals, in fact, remain hidden from view.
No,
she says. A lie, certainly.
Of course not. I respect you.
You can respect me and despise me at the same time. I felt much the same way about our former emperor. He was mighty and deserving of praise. He was also a monster, and one who made mistakes. That would have been heresy if Palpatine were still alive. Still might be, if those words were uttered to the wrong person.
Be that as it may, she says, suddenly uncomfortable. If you worry about me, please don't.
And yet I do. I know you've been to see Mos Amida. I know you've been investigating me in a way that goes well beyond cursory checkups. And I would guess that right now, feeling cornered, you are reaching for that elegant chrome blaster you keep at your hip. But I ask you to wait.
In the reflection of the blast glass enclosure, he sees her hand hovering near the weapon. So close. To her credit, she denies nothing. Good. He likes her. He would hate to have that feeling diminished by something so weak as a common lie. Lies must be big, grand, full of purpose.
Go on, she says.
Now, he turns. His arms spread wide and welcoming. His mouth pulled tight in a cold, rictus grin. I want to tell you my plan. Confusion flickers on her face like a short-circuiting holovid.
Why? Why now? You've kept me at arm's length.
Yes, because I am distrustful by nature, and because the future of this empire traipses delicately upon a wire. The chasm beneath it is deep, and I don't wish to shoulder it into the abyss by trusting the wrong people. Sloane narrows her eyes.
You're pulling strings, Admiral. I don't know what they're connected to or why you're pulling them. I don't even know who you are or where you come from. You are little more than a shadow, and yet you lead the Empire.
Secretly. You're the Grand Admiral here, I'll remind you.
Entitled, yes. And your leadership is not that secret. You're out in the open more than you think. Word will get out.
And when it does, I will confirm that I remain your most trusted advisor. A war hero who supports your own candidacy for Emperor.
Who are you, Admiral?
Rax rolls his eyes. Such a brutal, worthless question. He doesn't care to waste time on it. As if the identity of one man is really all that special.
The beauty is in the total mechanism, not the parts pulled out of it.
Instead, he cuts to the quick. I plan on attacking Chandrila, he says. The shock on her face. He won't lie and say it doesn't please him. It means she didn't see that coming.
If she didn't, nobody will. For so long, we've remained still. Patient, waiting, she says.
And now it's time to return to the galaxy and strike at the heart of the New Republic. Our attack will stagger them.
The fleet's hiding in the nebulae. Will you utilize them?
He offers another vicious smile, and she mistakes it as confirmation.
When?
She asks. Soon. All the pieces are almost in place.
What pieces?
In time. You'll see. Sloane bristles at that.
I need to know.
And I need you to trust. All will become clear in time. I want you with me through all of it, Grand Admiral Sloane. You are a vital resource. He says that last sentence as something he hopes is true. He will have to test her this one last time, just as he was tested many times. Do you trust me? She hesitates.
I don't know.
An honest answer. Good. Tell no one of this little talk. I'll let you know when it's time. Be ready.
And with that, he walks past her, because the conversation is over.